Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1083. Thank you for listening. I hope you're safe and healthy out there. We have just launched the vintage shop over at ID10T.com months and months and months ago, when this was a thing you could still do. In the first part of the year, we went to this like vintage warehouse and just, I pulled a bunch of shirts that I wanted to own and with the intent of putting in the ID10T shop, because I like to buy vintage t-shirts and I just enjoy that process. I'm like, I want to put some vintage shirts up on the site, stuff that I would want to own, but other people should take them because I have enough shirts. So if you go to ID10T.com, you will see we do have a little vintage shop on there now, and we've got one of a kind hand selected vintage pieces there, and more to come. So go check that out, id10t.com. It's funny that I spelled that out, like if you're listening to the podcast, okay, ID what? Well, it's the name of the podcast. Oh yeah, that's right, sorry. I like to share extra information. I'd like to blame it on the fact that I'm getting older, but I think that's just how I've always been. So it's probably just going to get way worse as I get older. I'm even doing it now, explaining about explaining too much. But let's talk about you, the ID10T Community Corkboard events at ID10T.com. Like Tristan and Greg, who write, "We've been listening to your show for a bloody long time, and about a year and a half ago, we started our own podcast called Double Impact, hosted by Tristan and Greg. Tristan and Greg are a couple of 90s kids on a mission to rewatch every classic movie from their childhood. Each week, they're going to pick apart a movie from the 80s or 90s. They're going to deconstruct it and basically see if it holds up today. Which movies hold up and which movies are just better left in the past. You can check out the show on Apple Podcasts and other podcast apps. Recent episodes, good entry points, they say, would be the Total Recall episode, the Office Space episode, and the Face Off episode. So, yeah, great job, Tristan and Greg. And what a fun way to connect with friends about old movies and just rewatching stuff. I love the Does It Hold Up test. So great job to build a podcast around that. This episode is Alana Ubach, who is hilarious and so quick and so funny, and she's an incredible actor, and she's been in so many things that I'm sure you've seen. I mean, I'm gonna list some of her filmography and stuff that you've seen. This is going back to the early 90s. Airborne, Sister Act 2, The Brady Bunch movie. She was amazing in that. Freeway, Clock Watchers, Legally Blonde. She was in Legally Blonde, Legally Blonde 2. It looks like there's a third one that she's also going to be in that. She was in Meet the Fockers, Herbie Fully Loaded, Still Waiting, Bad Teacher. She was in Coco. She was in Bombshell. And then on television, she's just guested on so many great television shows as well. And I'm sure you've seen her in stuff and gone, oh my God, she's great. Well, she's phenomenal on this podcast. It's one of those ones where that just there's momentum from the second we start and it just carries all the way through. And it was so much fun. Just so to give you a little backstory, this was one of the last podcasts that was recorded in person. We recorded this on Valentine's Day. And it was supposed to go up sooner, but then schedule shifted around and release dates of things shifted around. And so, then we held it, and now we're able to finally release it. So, you know, when the quality sounds like, oh, I think they're in the same room, we were in the same room, but this was when that was still allowed, several months ago. So, Alana right now is in not only, Crossing Swords, which is a show that's produced by Stupid Buddy, who does Robot Chicken. That's on Hulu. She plays Queen Tulip, and she's also on Euphoria, which I think I'm pretty sure is coming back. I don't know where they are in the shooting process with that, if they figured out how they're going to shoot that, but there's that. And also, she's on a new Fox show called Filthy Rich, which was announced is premiering September 21st. So many great things that you can see Alana Ubach on. And let's just start the podcast. But thank you to Alana for being just a fantastic guest. This podcast was such a fun, fast-moving breath of fresh air. So let's start it. I'm doing the over-talking thing again, and now I'm talking about doing the over-talking thing. I could edit this, but I'm not gonna. All right. This is the ID10T podcast number 1083 with the amazing and wonderful Alana Ubach.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Not yet. Not yet.
You're practicing.
We're getting a dog in a week, and then...
Okay.
And then, you know, we're sort of talking about maybe anytime between now and the summer, like, we'll... That process might start. And it's funny because, you know, my wife is like, well, it could take years. And I go, the fact that you said that means... Immediately. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's, yeah. So that'll happen. But, I mean, I hope it doesn't take too long because I'm already an old dad. Like, I don't want to be like a...
Oh, I'm an old bitch, too.
I got pregnant
when I was 41.
Amazing.
I mean, but... And Trump had been elected. The world was going to end.
Right.
That night when he got elected, I went over to my girlfriend's house and we were in Vancouver. And I kid you not, she had like wild turkey out and we were going to town and having a good time. And then she looks at me and she's like, gosh, Alana, your boobs look fantastic. Did you get a boob job? And I said, no, I did. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Could I be?
And then immediately to the...
London drugs. Pete on a stick. I was pregnant. Oh! And I thought, oh, my God! I killed him! The wild turkey. Yes, I was drinking and smoking. So I went to... I immediately went and got checked out. Everything was fine. It was lovely. The HCG levels were doubling up, which is very important, ladies. And it was ironic because my husband and I had frozen embryos. We have 5 kids on ice. You want one? You want one? They'll
be
little.
Do you want to do a giveaway? We'll do a giveaway on the podcast.
Hey, by the way, we're doing a giveaway for embryos. Alana Ubach and Thomas Russo.
What role did Alana play in the Brady Bunch movie? If you know the answer to this,
you get an embryo. You get an embryo. The healthiest one. They're right here on ice like champagne. Like Dom Perignon, baby. So, callers, we're waiting.
Oh, I forgot we don't have callers.
Oh, we don't
shit.
Have callers.
Oh, well. Well,
you know what? Insta us.
Yeah, Insta us. PM us your details. We'll send you the embryo.
And we'll send you an embryo. Nice.
We'll send you the embryo and some barbecue. Mm. Like, we'll send some barbecue. You know how they pack stuff in dry ice? We'll send an embryo and some Memphis barbecue.
Absolutely.
And
it would be great.
Well, yeah, because my wife always said, my wife has a lot of friends who are, you know, like friends who are trying to get pregnant and they get stressed. And
yeah.
She's like, you just need to like not worry about that stuff and just be in love and have sex with your significant other and just let it be.
It's yeah. And it's so hard.
And that helps. Obviously it's not going to fix it every time, but it does. The relaxing helps.
The relaxing really does help. And yes, I feel like we're all so pressured. It's okay. It's time. We need to have the you know, a baby and let's go and get my eggs checked and your sperm count checked and all of this crazy stuff that people make so much money on. But you and I are in the wrong business. We should be in the fertility business.
We should be in the... I saw, you know, like I get a lot of weird tech suggestions on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, you might like these tech stories. And one, I believe, is a fertility clinic, I think in Korea maybe.
Oh, wow.
And they have basically made these...
Gangnam style...
Well, it looks like an ATM, but it is a different kind of deposit, and it basically is like the tech is like it's like an actual vagina in a machine. Like it's not real, but it's like they're trying to mimic it as much as possible to sort of eliminate the need for, you know, people to go in and
do their business
do
in
the
a tiny
thing.
Little room.
Yeah, in a tiny
with
little
a penthouse. With- yeah.
With an old magazine from 1992.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so yes. The fertility business is,
And even my wife is like, oh, well, you should probably just go make sure that your, you know, your count is high. And I'm like, I don't think I can do that.
Do you even want to know?
No, I don't. Because I had two friends who went through, I think it was maybe 2 years of IVF, and it was incredibly taxing on them. And it finally worked out.
Finally stuck.
It just the whole thing. It's like that. That's when you really realize, like, oh, this is clinical, and we're animals, and this is science. It's so ironic, by the way. We're actually recording this podcast on Valentine's Day. So that's
Woo!
Very funny.
All righty, there's love in the air.
There's love in the air.
Freeze your eggs.
Fuck a robot. We can have a baby.
Ow!
But it's the it's that sort of. Like when you really look at it clinically like that, yeah. It's like, oh my God, that's right. We're just creatures.
But it's 2020.
Yeah.
And they ain't no looking back, honey. That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
It really is wild.
So I don't know. I don't know if I need to know all that information about myself. So I'm just sort of hoping that it's something, because, you know, Lydia's like, well, it could take a long time. And I'm like, well, because you said that, it'll probably happen immediately.
Ah, a little Clomid, a little cocktail.
Yeah, exactly. So it but, you know, if it does take a while, I am going to have to do that. And I just can't get around, like – Did your husband talk about it? Like, did he sort of talk about the process of it?
He was such an eye roller throughout the whole process because he was like, oh my gosh, you're perfectly healthy. Why do we have to go to a fertility clinic?
Yeah.
And I was afraid. I thought, oh, because of my age, maybe I should get checked out, this, that, and the other. And he said, you know, I really think you'll be okay. What about Eastern medicine? Maybe a little bit of like acupuncture or something?
Sure.
If you really want to get the ball rolling. And so, you know, what your wife is, you know, I think what your wife and everyone is saying is just like, it takes your body, you know, a while for it to say, oh, you want to be pregnant.
Right.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Now, let's get the ball rolling.
Well, it's because remember when I was growing up, and it was the, you know, I grew up in the, primarily in the 80s. I was a 70s baby, but I grew up in the 80s.
Yeah.
And that was very much the age, like, where condom awareness really took hold.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it just wasn't really anything that people talked about publicly before, and it was always, you know, like, the horror tales of being embarrassed to buy condoms and stuff. And so...
Do you remember the commercials, herpes lasts forever? Do you remember that one?
So does a diamond from Zales.
So does it, and so. Oh my God!
Yeah, but that's a weird thing my parents just like put the fear of God in me. They're like, condoms. Whenever you go do this, condoms. You don't want to. So I sort of grew up in such terror. Yeah. Of getting someone pregnant, thinking like, well, this is going to happen. We'll just stand near each other and then a baby just happens.
Right.
And then, you know, as you start to get older, like you kind of find out like, oh, it's actually kind of hard.
It's
surprising almost. It's almost like the shot that Luke makes at the end of A New Hope into the ventilation shaft. And so it's like the timing has to be right. There's a window. Temperature has to be,
right,
you know.
Which is phenomenal to me how we all exist. How many billions of people – have you seen Hong Kong? When you go to Hong Kong, you're like, wow, that was a lot of having sex.
There's a lot of people.
There's a lot of people getting horizontal and sexy.
There's a billion people there. There's a billion people in India. There's 350 million people in America. Like, it's – people are
– people have sex.
They do, and we're a weird pyramid scheme. Yeah, they do. They do, which is why it's sort of funny, like, when you like all the stresses that, you know, that I have, that I'm sure people as they're trying to get pregnant have, like, am I equipped to do this? Are we going to be able? And it's like, people are doing this for thousands of years
since the beginning of time.
Since the beginning of time,
I mean,
so to speak.
Yeah. It is really wild when you find out, oh, you know, I was, you know, conceived on prom night or something. And it was a one night stand.
Right.
Or whatever. Those are some wild stories.
It is funny that you know the date, though. It's funny that in your head...
October 27th.
That's almost some Doc Brown shit. That's some Doc Brown shit. October 27th.
October 27th. And it was funny because when I would go and visit him when I was in Vancouver during Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce,
yep.
I would visit him on the weekends. So I hadn't visited him since October 27th.
Oh.
A month had gone by, and I was like, wait a second. How did we get yeah. sexy time?
Right. You pinpointed it.
It was right before Halloween.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, that's nice. That's really nice. By the way, Lisa Edelstein, phenomenal. Mm. Just phenomenal.
Isn't she quite a smart
Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce is what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And a great writer.
And a director.
And she directs and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
What are these chocolates here for?
I don't know. Deb, did you bring these?
Yes.
Debbie,
is this for me?
Debbie, the booker of our podcast.
Can I have a chocolate? I'm so excited because my
thank you,
my,
Deb.
Thank you.
Oh, thank
so
you,
much.
Deb. Thank
oh,
you.
These are gorgeous.
Oh my God, I'm gonna tell her I got these. Oh, I mean, that's how nice these are.
These
I'm
are
gonna lie
beautiful.
To my wife and say, sweetheart, I picked these up for you on the way
I
home.
I hope she doesn't listen to your damn show.
No,
she
I don't think so. Yeah, but listen, by the time, yeah, that's true.
You're really gonna have a totally problem.
She's not. That's why she can't.
Woo!
Oh, you got to protect these, sweetheart. I know you want to kick them, but
we can't
cut off our nose to spite our face.
Oh, that's delicious.
This is really yeah. These look amazing. Thank you so much, Deb. These are very sweet.
Thank you, Deb.
How do you not feel anxious all the time? Because that's what I'm afraid of. Is like. I heard a thud in the other room. Did the kid fall? Is everything okay? What the fuck? Are they going
to
fall?
There is nothing more stressful than having to take care of something that small and
yeah.
that vulnerable
yeah.
24 hours a day. It is the worst. I'm not going to lie. I think all the money I made from Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce I spent on like night duelists.
Sure, sure. Yeah, of course.
Because when I don't get sleep, I start seeing things.
Of course.
It's like there's a coyote in the house. No, Alana, just go to sleep. Take a nap.
What is Los Angeles? We do have coyotes.
Yeah, we have a coyote in the house.
Yeah.
So my once they start walking,
mm-hmm.
then they're like basketballs. They can fall off the couch and,
yeah.
and they'll let you know when they're hungry.
Right.
And they give signs and everything. But, you know, you just have to know that I don't know one adult that craps in his pants.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know one adult that can't put a sentence together. So
right.
don't worry when they're not talking and they're not potty trained. Eventually, they're going to figure it out, you guys.
I always think that raising a kid is sort of like being a personal assistant to kind of a douchey celebrity who isn't paying you. Or
that's
like,
exactly what it
why
is.
Why you wanted that? Why are you throwing that food? Oh, God, please don't shit in the plant. Whoa, are
right.
you drunk? You know, like it just feels like you're just nonstop like, whoa. It's like you're a zookeeper and a psychotherapist and a crisis manager
yes.
and those things.
You are producing a huge studio blockbuster, and you got a pain in the ass for the week. You got a number one that's just always late and wasted and, you know, bringing hookers around to the trailer.
What?
You got to do a lot of damage control.
How many hookers has your baby brought home?
Seven. And that's not including the never mind.
Yeah, this is where the riff goes sideways. But you I remember you did At Midnight, I think at least once when we were doing that show at Comedy Central.
Oh my God. Yes. It was so much fun.
Yes, we did. You were great on it. I mean, like it's so interesting.
There are a lot of fans of that show. I wore that shirt that you gave
yes.
and I got approached so many times
oh,
from people.
Nice.
Oh my God. That show was that. I mean, that was an amazing show.
But it's funny to me that you don't. I mean, because your comic force is real strong.
Oh, thanks.
And it's funny to me that you never really did like
stand up and stuff, sketch
or whatever. It's just. But I know you do a lot of voiceover, and I know voiceover is like
yeah.
There are so many amazing comedy people in voiceover because I think it's just the. It's the kids who did a lot of voices in their rooms
That's
and
me.
Did a lot of characters.
I was
and
a
stuff.
Big crank caller when I was a little kid, and I play a lot of old ladies, and I play all these different people. And I was doing like the Jerky Boys before the Jerky Boys, right? Before they were making money off of it. And you know, I finally segued into it. And I thought, what a cool gig! You're in and out in an hour. It's during the day,
mm-hmm.
and I peak at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That's when I'm like smart, and it lasts for about 2 hours, and
right.
then it goes away. But unfortunately, stand-up comedy is at night.
Yeah.
And you put in your name and you never know when you're going to get seen.
Right.
And I'm such an a dork. I go to sleep at like 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, so do we. And I still do.
You know, oh, God bless you, man. And I just know I would be such a raging alcoholic if I was in stand-up. And I, you know, think, you know, I still audition. And a lot of the, you know, a lot of the stand-up comics are, you know, working during the week on mm-hmm. weeknights. So, you know, if I have an audition the next day, I'm going to be tired. I'm not going to do a good job. And that's, you know, that's where the money is.
Of course. You know what I mean? Absolutely. But the crank calls, was there like one in particular? Was there one sort of ruse that was your favorite, or was it was it like a constant stream of?
It was always, I watched Splash when I was a little girl, uh-huh. and there was this one saleswoman in Bloomingdale's
uh-huh.
when Daryl Hannah goes in and gets really lost and decides to go shopping by herself and she can't talk.
Right.
Right. Because she's a freaking mermaid.
She's a mermaid.
Children. There was a movie 75 years ago called Splash.
Back in the 1900s.
Back in the 1900s when Tom Hanks was
young. Tom Hanks.
Seven.
Might have been his first movie.
It was his big, big, I mean,
that was like
now you know why he's Tom
Bosom
Hanks.
Buddies.
Yeah, he did Bosom Buddies. He did a sitcom.
Yeah.
And then he went straight to like a Penny Marshall huge
hit. And Splash did well. And
Splash was a huge hit. That's why he's still around.
John Candy's in it. Eugene Levy's in it.
Yes, yes. So, John Candy.
Yeah.
When he breaks out into his – anyway, so there was I digress. But there was this saleswoman that she approaches, and the saleswoman, I watched that scene over and over and over again when I was a little kid. And it was, you know, oh my God, darling, that outfit is to die from. And what happened? You see Annie Hall 100 times? That look is over. You want to try that on? Who knows? Maybe it's you. It isn't me. I couldn't put one leg into there. And then she says something like, my daughter, on the other hand, is lucky. She's anorexic. And I thought it was so funny the way this woman, she stole the show. And I kept repeating it over and over again. And I would be that woman making reservations wherever I could. I'd pull out the yellow pages and I'd call, like, you know, the Black Angus. Is this the Black Angus? Yeah. Yes. And my daughter, she's anorexic, but I'm not. Can I order ahead of time? I mean, I just keep them going and going.
Sure.
And finally, they'd hang up, you know, because it was the 80s and people could be rude and tell people
and
off.
There was no caller ID.
There was no caller ID, which was great. Do you remember emergency breakthroughs? You have an emergency breakthrough from Michelle Loya?
Yes, because there were people who did not have call waiting.
Yes, my girlfriends did it all the time to me. My friends when I was a kid, you have an emergency breakthrough from
what?
I mean, yeah, it was very easy to do out here.
To break, yeah, because the busy signal, which very rarely, if you call them, it's like we were going to get pizza delivered last night. We called the restaurant and the phone was busy, and I was like,
what?
I don't even know what to do with it. Busy?
Oh my God. Someone died.
I know what happened.
They died.
An apocalypse. All the lines are down. It was like, no, they just got a lot of calls at the same time.
Right,
like,
right,
you know,
right.
Just what happens. But so.
Really?
So that evolved into. Yeah, you definitely. Did you grow up out here?
I was born and raised in Downey, man.
Fantastic.
Yeah, born and raised. My mom still lives in the house where I was born and raised.
Oh,
and
that's nice.
Yes, we had I grew up by around the corner from the Carpenters, Karen and Richard Carpenter, just like me.
Long to me.
On the day that.
I love the Carpenters' music, unironic. Like I fucking love it.
Go and oh, so far away.
So beautiful. Such good. It's such good music.
It was amazing music. And her brother, she and her brother grew up on Lubeck.
Okay.
And I was on Lesterford.
Okay.
And we would go and trick or treat over to their house, and they gave out dollar bills, dude.
You. What?
They gave out dollar bills. It was the 80s, man. Man, the economy was going strong.
That is a crazy story. Yeah. You trick-or-treated at the Carpenter's house.
I'll tell you something, man.
And they...
I made like $8 that night because I would go dress as a ballerina and I'd go home and dress up as a witch and I'd come back and then go dress as a baseball star and come back.
Basically, you've just described what your career became.
There you go.
Just like running home to change for a dollar.
Yeah, for a buck. For $7. Oh my God. And it was unbelievable the fact that they would... And then the following year, they'd give Big Bar Snickers.
Oh yeah.
Big Bar Snicker Bars.
Yep.
Not the tiny little fun size ones.
No, you got to give out full size. We give out full size too.
Do you give out full size?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
God.
I mean, it's
pre-taxes.
Just it just. It's a write-off.
It's a write-off.
All a write-off. But but so your career has been, because you were pretty much a scene stealer in Brady Bunch movie.
Oh, bless you.
And you didn't even have many lines, but it was all of the, it was just that subtext of the stuff with Marcia that was so well played.
You know, she, it was really funny. I was doing a play in New York. And it was Kinder Transport, and I had this very odd Anne Frank haircut.
Uh-huh.
So they dyed my hair very dark black, and I had these really ridiculous crooked bangs and a bob, because that was the style back then.
That was the style
in Germany,
those days.
Pre-World War II. That was the style. So when I walked into the audition, they were like, who the hell is this weird-looking chick with this hairdo? And I walked in sort of romanticizing and idolizing, the beautiful Christine Taylor. And I think that really helped.
Yeah.
It really helped.
I haven't seen
the silly haircut.
Like, that is still one of the – that movie is still the best adaptation of anything, because it
– Betty Thomas is a rock star.
Yeah. I mean, just the –
She's a rock star.
They could have tried to make another, you know, like, just another straight ahead. Oh, it's a Brady. Like, they could have tried to play it straight. And
because
yet,
a lot of the times they're like, every scene to me, every frame is at times, you know, in these sort of shticky, tongue-in-cheek movies.
Yeah.
It's just one billboard after another frame of just an advertisement of that brand.
Yeah.
And you're exhausted. You're like, come on, make me laugh.
Right.
So everything was a wink. It was great.
Yeah, but thank God they realized, like, oh, the point to make this movie is – the reason to make this movie is to basically have a conversation with the audience of, like – we also noticed a lot of the weird things that you noticed when you watched the show in syndication a thousand times.
Yes.
And it really was like a fan letter to those of us who grew up watching that show, like after school or, you know, whatever, when it would come on in syndication.
Absolutely. Very, very wild. I remember Imogene Coca. Remember her as, like, the wild aunt with Wonderlust?
Yes. The whole thing was great. But initially, I was asking you about comedy, and so how have you sort of found, like, what has the comedy track been like?
As a child actor, when you start out, you're doing mostly comedy,
right?
If you're lucky, you end up like a Dana Hill or a Quinn Cummings,
mm-hmm.
who did The Goodbye Girl.
Right.
She was lucky enough to get The Goodbye Girl, or Drew Barrymore, who mm-hmm. was doing, you know, Firestarter and E.T. and all these emotional films. But the majority of things that I went out on that I was right for was television.
Mm-hmm.
So from the time I was 13, I was going out on pilot after pilot after pilot. And what do you do when you're a kid in the 80s? It's all about comedy. It's all about sitcoms.
Yeah.
So that's basically how I just sort of fell into it. I mean, I came from the theater, technically. And, I was in L.A. I was in New York, and I did a couple of shows out there. And for me, it just sort of clicked. It seemed like there was a rhythm to comedy that I really responded to. And, I started out as a dancer. So that rhythm to it was so fulfilling to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took much more. It was harder for me to do drama. It was, and I think a lot of it had to do with ADD.
Sure.
And really having to be okay in my own skin and comfortable in my own skin.
Well, playing in the beats of a drama is like, with comedy, there's like a real, there's a definitive beat to it.
And if you're a bundle of nerves like I am, you can hide your anxiety behind comedy.
Just tuck it in there.
Always.
But in the 80s, in a pre-reality docuseries world, sitcoms were fucking huge. And I'm even trying to think now.
That's where the money was.
Yeah.
And that's why my child agent, Natalie Rawson, sent me out on those those pilots because she would make money off of that. She didn't make money off of sending me to like do regional theater or
sure.
to the La Jolla Playhouse or Pasadena Playhouse.
Yeah.
That's not where the money was. So that's why she would send me out on those things. And so I eventually just, you know, I thought, oh, I'm making a lot of people laugh. This is a very heady experience for me. And I was 13, 14. When you're making a room full of adults laugh, there's nothing like it. Because when you walk in and you do a really dramatic scene, you kind of get a head tilt from someone.
Yeah.
But that wasn't enough for me.
Right.
I wanted a party.
Yeah, well, you know, like it's I feel like it's harder to make someone laugh than it is to bum them out. You know, it's like,
oh, sure.
Everyone's got sad stuff in their life, and all you have to do is just say like, oh, you know, we lost our dog. Oh my God, I lost my dog. You know,
yeah.
But with comedy to hit the beats of it and to actually make someone laugh, and especially in a room in an audition situation where they are seeing
small theater.
person after person, and some of them just feel dead inside.
Mm-hmm.
To still be able to do that, to come in and surprise, because you know, you have to remember like. The casting director wants you to do well because if you do well, that makes them look good because they brought you into the producers.
Of course.
Makes their job easy.
Yeah.
So they want you to do well, but you know, a lot of times I feel like you'd go into these rooms and just be like, did everyone just not want to come in today? You know, it's like.
I'll never forget. I was at an audition one time. I swear to God, this happened. It was raining.
Mm-hmm.
And it was over at Warner Brothers, and a casting director who shall remain nameless, poor thing. She brought me in, and it was raining outside, and I had to walk to this damn audition, and it was for some pilot, and there was this very hot girl who was the lead of this new sitcom that was about to come on, and I was trying out for her best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in, and I sat down with her, and I read my soggy sides because of the rain, so I was reading the soggy sides. And it wasn't a great read, right? And I was kind of frustrated. And the casting director sort of went, okay, thanks. And the actress who was across from me was like, ooh. Like, oh yeah.
Oh, no.
And the producers were sort of sitting there. And I swear to God, man, I got up and I went, fuck you.
No.
And I ran out. And that casting director hasn't seen me since. Well, yeah.
Wait, but people didn't get to see you flip the double birds.
I'm like, fuck yeah. I was so fed up. I was like maybe 22.
That was your network moment.
Oh,
I'm mad as hell.
I was so pissed off. And it's so funny because my manager, God bless her, she's been with me. She has been with my ass since I was 15.
That's not where I was expecting that to come. I thought it was going to be like, and then I went outside.
No.
I had a moment.
No, I had to get it out.
That's my favorite thing.
I had to. Is this okay? Is this our radar?
Yeah.
No, I got really fucking pissed off, man, because I'll tell you something. You know, you go and you memorize all those damn lines and you're tired and you're looking for parking and you walk all the way down these freaking studios that are, it's so confusing to find
and
a place.
And you feel like cattle because there's 20 other people there.
20 other people
you can hear everyone in the room.
You can hear everyone getting laughs and then you walk in and no one laughs. And then the actress reading with you, who's probably making $100,000 in about a couple of weeks, has the audacity to say, ooh.
That's really rude.
Yeah.
Because even if it doesn't go well, all you have to do is just wait 30 seconds for someone to get out of the room and let them leave gracefully.
Absolutely.
You know, like there's no.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Thank you.
But it wasn't.
Did your manager call and go, so?
No, not. This is what's so funny. They didn't say anything to her. They never called her. But they never called her back anytime she pitched me for something. So she's like, you know, Alon, I'm having a hell of a time pitching you for roles at this casting office.
I was like, so curious.
Margaret, I got to be real with you right now. She's like, what's going on? I was like, you're not going to believe what I did. She's like, and I love her. She's so freaking cool. She's just always has my back. She was like, well, you probably had to do that. You know what, Alon, moving on. Shit held high. And that is why I will never, ever not be with Margaret.
Did you?
Margaret Pollock.
I need to know did you see their facial reactions?
Oh, the casting director went,
ooh! Fucking is amazing.
I bolted. I was so scared. I was like, what did I do? fuck you. I was so mad. Anyway, but then Catherine literally,
oh, the vapors.
The vapors.
Have you ever seen this actress again?
I have ran into her a couple of times, and I don't think she remembers.
Oh.
It was like 10 years later.
Okay.
And we met somewhere, actually at like a comedy club or something, and backstage.
Were you kind of thinking like, oh boy, is she gonna remember this?
You know what's so funny? I had completely forgotten about it.
Sure.
And then I met her, and because she started out as such a sort of an unknown, and now is so famous.
Yeah.
That when I saw her, I saw her as the famous person. I forgot about her that room. I
was right.
Like, oh, you're the one I said, fuck you to.
Yeah.
But,
does this ring a bell?
Fuck you! Oh, my God. Yes, it does. But ooh. There you are.
Ooh. Ooh.
Ew.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know what?
You know, people got away with a lot of crap in the 90s. The stuff that people got away with in, you know, because I think it was the time of grunge and people really starting to like stick it to the man.
Yeah.
And so I guess having that, you know, that influence in my late teens,
yeah,
it made my 20s unbearable practically.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
You know, I was always trying to stick it to the man.
Right.
And it felt so good walking down that studio in the rain after I had done that. I was like, I'll probably get blackballed. I'll never work again. I don't care. It was one of those moments.
Listen, I have to say, good for you.
Thanks,
because
thank you.
That is, I mean, that's just not something I would have.
Well,
had
you don't
the balls
have
do.
Anger problems. Like I do. I mean, you're a healthy, good man. You've got, you know. I mean, I've got anger issues. I'm not gonna lie, I got a temper.
That's so funny because my reaction, if that had happened to me, they'd gone, ooh, I would have been like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. What did I do?
Send the flowers.
I was up late. I have insomnia. I don't know what happened. You know, I would have been so apologetic.
Do you have older siblings?
No, well, I have a half brother who's older, but we didn't grow up together.
Okay.
So I was an only child, basically.
I mean, I was a kid with a sister who was 11 years older than me.
Okay.
And so I wanted to be her so badly.
Mm-hmm.
So all I wanted to do was be, I just wanted to be older
right.
when I was younger.
Right.
And, you know, she was listening to like Iggy Pop and, you know, The Pretender's Precious when I was a kid on an 8-track, and I was listening to that over and over again.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom and dad had the most foul mouths ever.
Oh, fantastic.
It was an emotional war zone when I was growing up. They were always fighting and stuff like that. But, you know, it gives you
not
character.
As fantastic.
Yeah, there you go. But, it builds a lot of character.
Sure.
With all those crazy influences. But at the same time, it can get you into trouble.
Well, yes. But, you know, for when you're going in to read for something, you're in a very vulnerable situation. Because our business relies on the fact that you have to figure out how to be somewhat impervious
private
to rejection.
Yeah.
And you just – it is – it just plays on every insecurity that you would have as a person. You know, it's just like – your personality, like whatever insecurities you have about your personality and your body and your looks and your this. And
brother, let me tell you something. Acting's harder. Performing is harder than playing the fiddle if it's done correctly. And no one gets that. No one gets that, man. It is hard. It's jazz.
So to jab at someone at a very vulnerable time when they're clearly – and also like – you know, like you need to be employed. You need money. It's a job. You know, it's like I'm so happy that you.
Hey, I did it for everyone, man. I did it for you.
Yeah,
I did it for you.
That's you're sort of
I
like
did it for everyone.
The Norma Ray of acting. You know, it's like you're Sally Field being carried out on everyone's shoulders. You know, like you started.
Man,
you're gonna take that shit anymore.
You know, if money was no object, I would love to produce all of my own things because I know what actors go through, and I would just love to just bring them in one time. They can come in one time or they can send a tape. It's okay.
Right,
and
right.
We hire them right off of that.
Yeah.
I don't have to know if they're, you know, have a good personality or not.
Right.
Do they show up on time?
Right.
Are they drug free? Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Or at least not when they're working.
Yeah.
And that's it. But you know, I came from that. I've been doing this for so many decades that now with everything going on and it's fascinating how careful people are nowadays.
Sure.
And how sensitive people are
sure.
to things that, God forbid, if I were to have done that now.
Oh, yeah.
be in Bellevue, baby. Or did Bellevue go in Chapter 11? I'd be somewhere, in some clinic somewhere.
Yes, yes, you'd be shipped off.
I'd be shipped off.
But that's what's so interesting. That's so interesting about voiceover to me is that it removes a lot of that process because it really is just performance alone, because it doesn't matter how you look next to the co-star.
No.
It doesn't matter how tall you are.
There's such a beauty to that.
It doesn't matter what you're wearing.
No.
All you have to do is nail the performance. And
that is true.
And that is what I love about voiceover. And I don't think I realized until today, because you have 1.5 million credits, and I'm like, I need to see everything.
I say yes to everything. Now, out of those million, I got paid on three. Three of those projects I got paid to do.
But you were in a Pixar movie.
Yes,
and
Coco.
You were Imelda.
Yes.
You were Mama Imelda, and I didn't know that until then. I was like, holy shit. And it's the actors who disappear into the role. You can't, that's voiceover to me is,
oh, thank you.
You can't identify who it is. I mean, there are sometimes,
it's so gratifying.
Like I know, like there's some guys I know really well. Like I know Maurice LaMarche, so I know what's his name? Orson Welles. I know it's probably Maurice. Like there are some people that I know.
Oh, of course.
But I didn't know you did that. And then I started reading about your background. I'm like, oh my God, she's half Puerto Rican and half Mexican. And she has this really interesting, like, I guess I just thought Ubach was German.
It is German. We don't know how the hell we got that.
So you have a German name and you're half Puerto Rican and half Mexican.
Well, I'll tell you something. It's funny. A lot of people don't know this. But when my father passed away, we used to pronounce it Ubac, mm-hmm. and he was pronouncing it improperly from the time, you know what I mean? So Ubac isn't even the right way to say it.
Yeah.
Finally, Facebook came around and I found other Ubachs.
Yeah.
And they were all in Spain.
What?
Yes. So I think they changed their name to Anglinize, or is that such a word?
Sure.
To Germanize.
Oh, to Germanize their names?
Before the war.
Oh.
And I think they were Spanish Jews.
Oh,
so they changed their name to make it sound German.
What was the original name?
I'm assuming it must have been something very either Catalan or something that was Barcelonian or something.
Sure.
But all of my grandparents are from Malaga, so they all changed. I found this through Facebook that the name was changed. It was changed to sound German so that, you know, they were Spanish Jews and they wouldn't be effed with.
Oh my God, that's
what
happened. Incredible.
So that's why my name is German, but I'm not.
No.
Which is so weird. The things people do to survive, right?
Yeah, that's incredible.
You know what they should have said? Fuck you to the Germans.
If it had been
I'm
you.
Changing,
if it had been
I'm
you.
I'm keeping my last name.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, come on, let's get on this boat.
But that movie is like, you know, every Pixar movie that comes along, I'm like, all right, Pixar, you're not going to fucking get me again.
Oh,
and then
right,
you get into it.
Unbelievable.
Coco is such a... Oh, it's such a beautiful story. God damn it.
It really is about familia and the importance of never forgetting
yes.
the past,
oh,
right?
God,
never forgetting.
People, they don't have the picture. They don't, no one remembers
yeah,
you.
You know,
oh, God
gosh.
Damn it. It just
Thank
fucking
you.
Kills you.
Yeah.
It just kills you.
It is really, to me, I thought, wow, this is, you know, when you're putting it together, you really don't know what it's going to look like in its entirety. You don't know how it's going to work.
Yeah.
But when they kept calling me back to redo scenes because they couldn't hear some kind of emotional inflection, I thought,
yeah.
oh, this is going to be serious.
Right.
This is when you knew. And meeting Lee Ankrich, who is, you know, basically the brains, he and Darla.
Yeah.
And Adrian are all the brains behind this, the whole Coco phenomenon, is when you meet them in person, you're like, okay, this is going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just seemed very detail-oriented and very emotionally invested in what they were talking about.
Right.
So when they came, Alana, we have the figures in the other room. Do you want to go and see them? And, you know, and you see the evolution and their excitement and enthusiasm. You're like, oh, this is infectious. How could this not be a masterpiece with
yeah.
these people behind it?
And it's just stunning to look at, too.
Oh,
like the
yeah.
like the Land of the Dead and the spirit animal. Like it's.
Have you been to Pixar? Have you been to the headquarters?
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah,
I've stood outside the big lamp.
Right, there you go.
And I, you know, like I bought everything I could buy at the Pixar Studio store.
Yeah.
Like, I need this forever. And but it really, you know, that movie is just such a, it's just such a simple, beautiful story. And my favorite thing about, I've done a lot of voiceover. My favorite thing about it is, you know, you come in and you, you know, you give the performance, you give a performance and they direct you or whatever. And then there's a real relationship between you and the director and the artist, because they will, they can find things in your performance. They go, oh, and then they start to animate a little bit around your performance and then bring you back in for ADR and go, now if you can just kick it a little bit in this direction. And so you really form a relationship with the artists that is really fun. You kind of find the stuff together.
Yeah.
And I love that about it. Yeah,
you're
you are. But you're all working together.
All working together. It's it is a lab. I mean, and it's a lot of trial and error and a lot of rushing, because the little boy who was cast as Miguel was going through puberty.
Oh,
so
yeah,
we,
sure.
We had to move.
Yeah.
Because his voice was going to change. And he had such a beautiful, young, youthful voice.
Mama Imelda, I want to be a musician. Oh, cat. All right. Yeah, I don't know this is going to.
Okay, you're on your own. But, yeah, it is really amazing. We performed Coco live at the Hollywood Bowl just recently. That was insane!
I didn't know that.
Yeah!
So did you, was it just like, were they showing anything, or you just did a stage reading with an orchestra?
They show the entire movie, but then they stop it in between, and then you actually do performances of the music that's in the movie.
Holy shit.
It's fantastic. It was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had.
Yeah. I would imagine.
Oh my gosh.
And so are you a Disney fan at all?
I grew up in Downey, which is right around the corner from Anaheim.
Yeah.
So we were always going to Disneyland. And my best friend was Peter Pan in the parade.
Amazing.
Yeah. Jesse Morales. And he was...
It'd be funny if he was still doing Peter Pan. Because he's still a boy. He's still a boy. He's still a little boy.
He never grows up.
He can't grow up.
And he was always in the parade. So I would go and take pictures. My dad got me this vintage camera one time for Christmas. And... the next day I went to Disneyland and called Jesse and I said, are you going to be in the parade? He was like, yeah. And I took all these really cool black and whites of... So I'd go there every weekend and take pictures, and he'd sneak me in for free. It was great.
Did we ever meet in the 90s? Because I feel like our circles were pretty close.
Okay.
A lot of the same people.
We may have dated the same people, or I don't know, whatever floats your boat.
Hey, come on. I'm not here to judge. You know what I'm saying?
Seth Green.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
The Seths and the Breckens of the world.
He and I dated when we were puppies.
Oh, that's adorable. I think I knew that, actually, now that you say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I knew that group because I dated a girl named Lisa Raffel.
Oh, Lisa, yes. Yeah. What a looker.
And,
boy. You scored there, man.
Well, she's a, like, she ended up...
Killing Lola.
Yeah, starting a band.
Killing Lola, yeah.
And she's fucking great. Like, her music is great.
She's phenomenal.
Yeah, phenomenal. Like, her stage presence was really, I mean, like, I think I did a show with them, maybe back in 2003 or 4 or something.
Yeah.
And she just, like, blew the doors off the place. But, so that was my connection to that group. And I still see Seth and Claire all the time.
That's amazing.
And so it's fun to have watched everyone sort of grow up, because there was that Valley contingency of kids who would always, like, you'd be at Jerry's Deli at 3 o'clock in the morning, because when you're 19, there's no other place
to go. That's where you went,
Yeah, so.
There was, I had done a movie called Airborne when I was a little girl. I was like 16 and Seth Green was in it. And he and I started dating, and then he met Brecken Meyer, who was always hanging out with us, and they were best friends. I mean, you know, and Brecken and I, they were just so funny and so intense and so smart.
Everyone in that group with, like, Lisa was hysterical.
Unbelievable.
Like, so funny. Like, everyone was so funny in that group.
Yeah. It was, they were so talented. I knew there wasn't a doubt in my mind that they weren't going to be these successful men. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, they always had me cracking up. And the embarrassment chip was missing in their brains. And I thought that, the possibilities are endless with these kids. Yeah. Right? And then we all sort of went off on our own way because life happens. And,
yep.
And now I'm going to be on this new show that I don't know if I could talk about it. I guess I can. Crossing Swords on Hulu.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's this new show that Seth is producing.
Yep.
And I have not seen him, but I have gone to his headquarters mm-hmm. to film or to do the voiceover.
Yep.
As the queen, the wicked queen.
Yeah, that's in Burbank where they do Robot Chicken.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Still great. Still all great people, you know?
Like, yeah, for sure.
It's fun
kind of doing what they love.
Yes. And it's kind of fun to watch people, like, survive the business.
Jesus Lord.
Because it's got to be hard. You know, like, kid actors, you know, that Oakwood cluster, you know, like, all those kids who lived it because...
So depressed.
Yeah. It's so hard to... There's a lot to navigate, you know, like parental pressure, the sort of weird, you know, it's like...
Of course.
It's hard enough to grow up as it is.
Did you see Honey Boy?
I haven't seen it yet. What? Is it the same kind of story?
It's Shia LaBeouf explaining why he's so effed up. And he says the reason why I have anger issues and this, that, and the other is because I had a dad who I was supporting and lived in a hotel and I was doing these huge movies. I was a kid actor.
Yeah.
And it shows the trials and tribulations of being a kid actor in L.A. It's crazy. But I know exactly what you're talking about. The damn Oakwoods.
Yeah.
Where Jennifer Love Hewitt was out with her mom for a while and all those kids, you know?
Yeah, I think what...
The pressure.
Wasn't there a documentary? I feel like there was a documentary about the Oakwoods.
Yeah, really?
About the Oakwood Apartments.
That's fascinating.
Because it you know, at one time it was like DiCaprio and, you know, it's like all these... Who was a part of that group? There was a group that was like Leonardo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire
and all these other kids.
Like three or four. Jay Ferguson.
Yes,
like,
Jay Ferguson.
Like
yes.
Two or three or four other people.
That's right. And Bo Jesse Christopher. And yeah.
And they were just like, and I remember them as just like these, like, you know, we were all just snotty teenagers.
A bunch of energetic kids that were, that were Taft Hartley'd with just a twinkle in their eye. And it's fascinating. I think what happens is, you know, knowing that it's going to come to an end, knowing that being a child actor is going to come to an end and then you have to start again as an adult is a really wild thing. And I feel like I had to start all over again. But I was very hyper aware of that.
Yeah.
And knew that... You know, I looked 35 when I was 17, so I knew that nothing was really going to happen for me, career-wise, really going to be where I could actually make a living off of it mm-hmm. until I was about 35.
Oh,
I was so well aware of that.
You knew that when you were a kid.
I had a feeling, yeah, because it was just – my voice was lower. I sounded older. Mm-hmm. I didn't roll like – the number one bubbly teeny bopper. I just didn't roll that way. I was a little weirder and darker. So I just thought, okay, I think what's going to happen is I'll probably end up a character actress.
But your career, first of all, which I think is the fucking best thing to be in
super
the business.
Super fun. But if you saw what I netted yearly, you'd be like, maybe not. Maybe not, Alana. Maybe you need to start writing and producing your own shit.
I just mean that I feel like there's a certain protection that character actors have because you...
Well, I can age properly. I don't have to get a big old facelift. Although, Joan Rivers is fabulous.
She's fabulous. Fabulous. But I also think that that career path is a good one because what inevitably will happen is inevitably you're going to be in some... movie, something, and it's going to fucking blow up. And then people are going to be like, oh, that's right. This is the woman who has done, like, you have such a foundation.
An Easter egg game.
It is an Easter egg game.
Sure.
Oh, when she did this, and she was the voice of this, and holy shit, that's right. She was in this, and this, and this. And I feel like that creates the longevity because you have such a foundation of great work that it's so much better, I think, than just being like an overnight success.
There's no such thing.
Every kind of project, sort of like, so take Splash example, the Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks always had this theory that you know, you were given like one movie, you know, and if that movie did well, you would get three more. And if any of those did well, you would get three more. But if the first movie didn't do well, it was unlikely that it would happen again. Or if any of the next three didn't do well.
Yeah.
And so when you only kind of have one project that you're living or dying by,
right.
I feel like it can be harder to sustain because then you can just kind of get written off. But to just have... you know, all of the stuff that you've worked on.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you so much. I mean, you get it. It's to me, it's very much my husband is a music producer. And we were talking about how he calls me the drummer. He's just like, you're a studio drummer, Alana. And I was like, well, what do you mean by that? He was like, well, you're Ringo. He said, because it's, you know, Ringo never got into the drama of the Beatles or any of the, but he was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, to be the drummer of a band rather than the front man is so much safer because if a record doesn't do well, it's not on you.
Right.
You know, it's not, if a movie doesn't do well, it is not on you. You will always have another gig.
By the way, you also get generally the best scenes. You get to come in, like, you know, Brady Bunch movie, you are so memorable in that just for the coolest, you know, it's like, and the movie doesn't live or die by you, and but yet people go, oh, you know, usually when you're like the, you know, you got to carry a movie or whatever, then you get blamed. Like, if it doesn't do well,
they
get blamed. Or you just get to come in and go, hey, we didn't like that. But boy, this one girl who was in there was so funny. You just get to, shine.
Well, it's a lot of fun, and bless you for saying that, you know, Bombshell,
yeah.
Which was a movie that I did play yes. Jeanine Pirro.
Yes.
When I saw Charlize Theron in makeup, she was there for hours getting those prosthetics put on her face.
Yeah.
The patience that it took for her to do this, plus produce,
yeah.
Plus put everything together,
yeah.
Plus do a great performance. I thought, oh my God, this whole movie is on her.
Mm-hmm.
And Margot Robbie. And
yeah.
They seemed very... very zen about the entire thing, and they're so centered, and but it really does take a certain sort of mentality to be able to carry a picture and say, okay, let's see how this works.
Yeah,
let's see how this goes.
But yeah,
it's wild. It takes a certain kind of someone to do that, I think.
And so, what is your audition process like now? Is it sort of a?
Well, I'll tell you. I got an AK-47.
Fuck you!
Listen, no. But no, now it's so much easier because I don't feel now the pressure of having to, I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like casting directors are much kinder than they were.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more patient.
Right.
And there is a very small list of people that they call in. So if they call you in, you are really right for the role.
Right.
And then it's just the look.
Right.
That's not your problem.
Right,
what are you
going to
do? But, you know, half of the time I'll look and I'll see whatever, you know, nowadays I'll see, you know, okay, what is the project then? And then I'll put it, I'll go on Deadline and see what they have to say about the project and who's in it.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, is there any, okay, is my co-star short? I have a shot at this. Okay, it's great. This is good. You know, but you have to keep all of that in mind when you walk in. And, you know, I see people auditioning that I'm just floored that they still audition. It's unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
You know, when you see like certain actors, you're like, what the hell are they doing here? They should get offers.
No, but some people they have a really good, I had lunch with someone who is a very well-established actor, and he's an older gentleman, and he
still auditions.
Still auditions.
Whoa.
Because to him, he's like, of course I would. Why wouldn't I? That's my job. And he says he goes, and people see him at auditions, and they're like, you audition? And he's like, yeah, this is my job. And so he fuck it, it's Henry Winkler, I'll tell you. And he would tell you.
Right.
But I was so inspired by that because he doesn't have an ego about it. And,
right.
And because we were talking about Barry and I was like, oh, did they offer you? He's like, no, I auditioned for, you know, and I was like, wow.
He auditioned for Barry?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's happy to. And I just.
Oh my God. I would think it would be rude on the producer's part to have him audition. I'd be like, oh my God, that's just so rude. Let's not have him. But let's just talk to him.
He just feels that it's about the work and that's what you do. And it's a job and you treat it with respect. And it's like all these things that are so not what our egos want us to do, which is be like,
yeah,
I am not getting in my car and parking and, you know, just to, if they want to offer, you know, which is a very, I feel like so much of us clamor to get to that point because the process can be so dehumanizing. But if you can figure out how to love and embrace the process, as difficult as that may be, then I feel like you're going to do great because that, because then you're not getting in your own way.
Yeah, it's all anxiety. I mean, a lot of it is preparation too. I mean, if I get a call for an audition at like 10 a.m. at 8 o'clock the night before, I'll say, I don't, let me look at the sides. Okay, 7 pages of a monologue, I can't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If, you know, I'm usually, I have to be given like 48 hours to really figure out what this person is and then go in. But, I mean, a lot of the actors that can go and do like 3 auditions a day, that is, God bless them.
Yeah, exactly.
But that is not me.
No, I can't do it.
I can't do it.
Yeah, that's why I quit. Well, I wasn't getting hired a lot as an actor. And so I sort of realized, and it was really nice, like many, many, many years ago in Steve Martin's book, Born Standing Up, he talks about...
I want to read that.
Oh, get the audio version because he reads it.
Beautiful.
And it's so fun to hear him read it. But he, you know, he talks about how before he kind of like made his big jump, you know, he was sitting in an audition room and he looked around. There was a bunch of dudes who just looked like him. And he kind of went, you know, I don't think this is going to be my path. This is not going to be, because there are people who are really good at that. You know, it's like, how many fucking pilots did Matt Perry do before Friends? You know, it's like there are some people who can just kill it in a room. And I was not that guy. Mm-hmm. And so I just had to stop because I was feeling bad about not getting jobs I didn't even want, you know?
It's right.
Like, you'd read this guy, isn't that funny? And
what's
they go,
the
they're going a different direction. What? You're like, you didn't even want this. I know, but it still stings.
No, it's not getting texted from that really ugly chick you took out on a date.
Well,
the following day, she blows you off. She blew me off? Wait a second. I was supposed to blow her off.
Well, a lot of people could become performers to sort of deal with the fact that we were rejected in school.
Yeah.
And so then we go to a business that's just like fucking school.
You know, rejecting us over and over again.
And so it's
getting
just,
graded.
Yeah, getting graded. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, I'm not cool enough to, oh, I'm not popular enough. What the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
I thought I left all that shit, you know? So it really does poke at a lot of insecurities. And so being able to navigate that and do it well is a whole fucking skill set.
It really is. And also, you know, just not, you know, the fun part is trying to figure out if it's not great dialogue or if it's not really well written. That's the fun part where you can kind of figure out how to make it real and work.
Right.
And this and that and the other. But, you know, I don't know. Philip Seymour Hoffman said something and he said, I loved auditions because to me it was just kind of testing out to see, taste testing if I can play that character. Yeah, I can play that character. I can play that character too. Whether I work with them or not, my job was done after I performed.
That is a great perspective.
It's a great perspective, right? It was that one performance.
So hard to get. But I also feel like that's where voiceover training is impeccable because with voiceover, you're trying to find beats that aren't on the page. You're looking in between stuff to figure out. How do I – because I think you – with a cartoon, you tend to think more one-dimensionally because you go, okay, this is what the character looks like. So they probably sound like this, which informs their personality. So there's probably all these layers, which I think is a lot harder with live action to find those moments.
Of course, because you're not given a blueprint.
Right.
Wouldn't you love to be given like the whole outline of what the character should look like?
Yeah, if you're like a fucking octopus with big teeth, then you –
I just got my braces off, guys. Yeah, but yeah, for sure.
Live action auditions, just go in like, you know, I have a lot of voiceover training, so I wanted to try to bring that to this character.
Let's do this.
Yeah,
do
exactly.
This. Oh my gosh, it's so fun.
Are you working on any cartoon? What are you working on this moment?
I'm coming out in Filthy Rich, which is a show on Fox starring Kim Cattrall, and it was created by Tate Taylor. Tate Taylor created or directed The Help,
mm-hmm.
the movie The Help.
Yes.
And Ma.
Yes.
And he is...
Oh, that Octavia Spencer.
Yeah, yes.
The psychological thriller.
He's Octavia's best friend.
Amazing.
They're best friends. So he created this. Now, it's real. It's like Southern Gothic, really fun. And I'm in that coming out in March on Fox. It's right after The Masked Singer. So that's coming out soon. And
good lead-in.
Good lead-in. So we're...
And then we're getting ready for Euphoria, the second season.
Oh, you're coming
season.
Back to Euphoria. Yeah, great.
Euphoria second season. I think I'm coming back. I just got an email from the wardrobe department asking me if I've gained or lost any weight. I'm like, all right. I think that's a sign I'm coming back.
What are they like? You're not coming back. We just wanted to know.
We just wanted to know.
Yeah,
we were just curious.
Yeah, we just want to know if you're okay. Yeah, you're good. If you gained or lost any weight. Are you pregnant? Wait a minute. Let's all take it down a notch. Not pregnant again.
Not pregnant again.
Is one good? Have you
thought? One and done, baby.
One and done,
They are so expensive. I can't. Oh my God. He is so expensive. I mean, just the diapers, Amazon. I mean, I can't. I'm the reason Amazon is. No, I'm not.
And the cocaine habit.
And the cocaine
habit. Yeah, it's like babies. They just go. They blow through that shit.
I mean, it's nuts.
Because my wife keeps saying like, oh, two, and I'm like, one is good, and she's like, yeah, but then they'll be able to, and I play with each other.
Play with each other.
Yeah, but one, like, we could just. You know, like take a baby and then just travel, and two is like you're starting to herd cats, and I don't know.
And if they're two completely different personalities, they're not going to hang out with each other.
Right, right.
And then what do you get? This one likes books. This one likes his TV and his video games. This one wants to be out at this party.
Well, then she dropped the smart bomb on me, which is there's a high occurrence of twins in my family. Oh, okay, good.
Oh man.
So we could just knock it out the first time, and then. You know, twins would probably be okay, because then they have, like, that weird twin meld.
Oh, yeah.
And so then they're inseparable. So they're sort of like a person and a half.
Absolutely, they're a person and a half. it's a wonderful thing. So if you're thinking about fertility, you might have, like, quadruplets or something.
Oh, shit.
I know.
Well, I don't know. I don't think she's going to go on any – I don't think there's going to be any
–
Yeah. So
good.
If we have quadruplets, then – that's nature basically being you in that audition going, fuck you!
Woo!
So, any parenting advice?
Oh, gosh. Parenting advice? Just, you know what? I mean, hey, don't give it alcohol.
All right.
Maybe a couple of sips here and there, but you'll be fine.
On their gums. They put them to sleep.
I kid you not. The craziest thing about being a parent is you're given this keyhole into your childhood,
mm-hmm.
and these really wild memories that you forgot, that you suppressed, mm-hmm. start to happen as they age. So. When I was 2.5 years old, I was in this terrible car accident as a kid.
Oh, my God.
And I barely remember it. My kid is 2.5, and I'm starting to get flashbacks of the
Holy
moment.
Shit.
It's crazy. Like, I remember everything now. Everything about that car accident. I remember.
So the kid just unlocks some deep subconscious vault.
That is it, baby. And it's going to happen, especially if you have a son. You're not going to believe it.
Lydia is adamant that we're going to have girls. She's like, we're going to have little girls.
Yeah, little girls.
Yeah. And
But it's moments that happened to you that you forgot about in either preschool or kindergarten that were embarrassing moments or what have you. I started to smell this ammonia that reminded me not too long ago. My husband and I were walking. I don't know. We were at a mall or something, and I stopped. And he said, "What?" And I said, "Do you smell that ammonia? That scent?" And he was like, "Yeah, yeah. It's cleaner." And I said, "That was the smell of Montessori when I was a little girl." And he was like, "I'll be damned! Isn't that weird when that happens?" I said, "Yeah, but it's happening more frequently now."
Oh wow, that's
so,
really cool.
Yeah,
well,
you're gonna. That's gonna happen.
I look forward to having a lot of emotional breakthroughs.
I'm
remembering. You almost feel like a psychic. Like I sense. I feel like.
Well,
this.
Wait till you start playing pretend with them. That's the fun part.
Okay.
When you get to be like little characters, and then it's Batman. We're Spider-Man. calling all cars. It's the best. It is so much fun.
So, do you think your kid's going to be a performer?
You know, it's funny. I'm not going to lie. We're looking for those little signs here and there. He loves attention. He's very textbook.
Uh-huh.
He started walking. It was like, I had this little book and it said, this week your child will be walking. And he walked right into the room. I was like, oh, there you go. this week he will be talking. It's like, Mom, look at the cars. Oh, there he goes.
All right, there he is.
So he's very textbook. I still don't know yet. He's very rambunctious and fun and... really having very social,
mm-hmm.
and tender. So let's see what that manifests into. Who knows? But God, I hope he's not an actor. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. I hope he's not an actor.
You need to you need to start training him now. So just to give him some sides and have him walk into your room and then just, thank you. We'll let you know.
There, like, we'll let you know.
Well, if you give a good performance, mommy will love you. So
I saw what you were trying to do.
Ooh.
Ooh. But yeah, ew. Ooh. Oh!
Fuck you!
Fuck you!
Good kid. You're learning. You're learning.
We're talking.
Oh my God. Man, it's so good to see you. And
this
is so much fun.
Oh my God.
And just like reminiscing about these great people in our, you know, who are in our.
When did you know you wanted to start?
Oh, I mean, I immediately. Like, my. I was born in 71, and then when SNL started, I mean, I was probably 5 or 6, and my parents noticed that I was transfixed by it, and so they – and then Steve Martin started coming on that show, and then he was releasing comedy albums, and so they just started buying – and by the way, my parents weren't they weren't really into that. Like, it wasn't – like, they were funny people, but – their comic sensibilities, like their pop culture sensibilities, were different. But whatever it was about them, they recognized that I was into it, so they fed it.
How sweet.
And then it just so happened that in the 80s there was this stand-up comedy boom, and I watched every, you know, like, and they just, my dad would tape, you know, like, and I was, God, I mean, I was like 10 or 11, and he would, you know, videotape like a Richard Pryor special and be like, here you go. And so they, you know, like, I had a little VCR in my room, and so they would give me comedy tapes and buy albums
that
and cassette tapes
thing.
And stuff. And so, yeah, so that was the thing. So I knew I was so connected to that. So I knew that I wanted to be a performer, but I didn't, even though I did stand up a little bit in college, it wasn't until I was 28. I was so terrified to like really do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't start until I was 28. And so, you know, I kind of wish I had started younger, but whatever, you know, like it happened the way it happened, but
I think it's cool that you started at 28 because 28, you really have so much more, juice to your material. Sometimes watching really young stand-up comics when I'm, you know, if I'm at the Improv or if I'm at the Laugh Factory, I'm like, oh, their comedy is just so young. But
it's young.
Let's give them a couple of years.
Give them a couple, you know, to marinate. Stick that back in the oven. Well, I started working for MTV like right out of college. I left college to go work for MTV, so I had like a television job.
Yeah.
But then when the television job ended and there were no other offers coming in, I was like, well, I think now is the time I can focus on stand-up, and so that's what I did. I was so scared to do it, but you know, I had so much reverence for it,
right?
And I just didn't know if I was that, you know, like, well, I can't be like Steve Martin. I don't write that way.
The monster was inaccessible. It was on a pedestal. It was too far away.
And I didn't write like all my favorite comics, like, you know, Steve Martin or Emo Phillips or, you know, Sam Kinison or Seinfeld. Like, I just didn't – or Judy Tenuta was someone that I loved. And I didn't write like any of them. I didn't write – like, there were a lot of really funny sort of surrealist comics, the
Mitch
Stephen
Hedberg
Wrights and the Mitch and, you know – and I always wanted to write that way, but I don't. And it fucking drives me nuts.
Well, yeah. I mean, the knack. To have the knack of that kind of – that skill. I mean, I worked with Kevin Hart one time. We did a pilot together. And bless that guy. He was just constantly coming up with material. I mean, it was – and he was – the energy that it took to be Kevin Hart – I mean, it was unbelievable to me. It was like if Jerry Lewis and Alec Baldwin and Bugs Bunny had a threesome, Kevin Hart would be the fucking offspring.
Someone needs to animate that.
There you go. But I mean, he was just so on all the time. And I thought, you know, it's just that brain would not stop.
Right.
And I'm like, I'll bet he's up really late at night just working on things all the time. It's a Joan Rivers sort of, an obsession.
Yes, yes, yes. But, it, you know, and I've had this conversation about Joan many times because I'm fascinated by it. But it kept her youthful.
Yes.
Like that, in as much as she might have been sort of tortured by that, it kept her alive and youthful and performing until the day she, you know, died unnaturally. And so it there is that kind of thing. And because a lot of comics will start to get comfortable as they get older. And then, you know, it's like, it just becomes harder to do comedy because you're like, it's nice to be at home and the grind.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
A little complacent. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, it's very easy to do that, especially if the climb was tough. And then you're finally there and you're like, okay, now I can
Now
sleep.
I can find, oh, God, now I'm old.
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
funny now?
What's funny now?
I don't know. I don't know what's funny anymore.
It's the same thing with my husband. You know, my husband is a music producer, and he was just like, you have to remain relevant.
Right.
And current. He was like with every, you know, from all of the, you know, it's not about knowing Billie Eilish. It's knowing all the 10 other kids that are underneath Billie Eilish, Eilish that are unknown.
But that takes that. But what that takes is like a hunger.
Hunger.
And hunger takes like
curiosity.
It takes a lot of energy to stay hungry. And when you're young, it's easy because you're looking around.
All of those
you have
cells
a ton of energy.
Are so fresh.
Yeah, they're so fresh. And then it's like at a certain point, you're like, you're not that hungry. I don't know. What am I, you know? So
yeah, it's true.
So how do you keep the process fresh for you so that it's still enticing?
Well, it's every single role is different. So that's, I think, the start of me getting excited about something
yeah.
new and interesting. And as I've gotten older, the parts are getting more interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, it was always the best friend I don't know, the girl going, yeah, you should call him back. Go,
right.
girl. You know, that sort of a thing. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to gouge my eyeballs out if
right.
I'm in my 30s and 40s and I'm still playing these freaking characters. Oh, my God. What? There's no growth here.
Right.
So finally, you know, as you get into your late 30s and 40s, you know, the roles are much more interesting. They're more developed. They're layered. They're written by older people.
Right.
So when you're – so I get excited about,
right.
you know, these – the stuff that comes in.
Right.
The parts are much more interesting. It took a lot for me to get – to muster up the courage to go on the stuff that I knew I was wrong for in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
But that's why I think that – I mean, and you're already like – you're already doing such great stuff. I just think at a certain point there's going to be – I mean, like you were in Bombshell. Like you're going to – You're gonna be in something, and then people are gonna be like, "Holy shit!" And it's gonna be the sum total of just decades of work, you know. Like, and then there are gonna be some people who are gonna be like, "Oh my god, she's like an overnight success," and they go back and they go, "Oh my god, no, she's been in
Hell
all these things.
Hell no,
yeah, it's been in all these
That's
things.
That's one old bitch." But it's still a lot of fun. Now, exactly, tell me exactly what happened to this little bear here.
Oh, the Teddy Ruxpin?
This Teddy Ruxpin!
It is a Teddy Ruxpin. So
oh, my gosh.
It was a gift from my wife. And
we oh, my God, it's brilliant.
We like a lot of, you know, like, we like a lot of weird stuff.
Fun stuff.
Fun stuff. And so there's a company that, I got to remember the name of them so I can.
Did she call them and say, make them look crazy?
It's called Blood and Teeth. And so they basically...
Oh, they F up old school.
They fuck up old school stuff and they make them sort of look like horror, you know, like horror movie type
oh
stuff.
Oh my
so
God!
They kind of like melted down parts of this Teddy Ruxpin and sort of made him look like a Terminator in Act 3.
Oh my God,
where he's,
that's
you know, like super fucked up and they hang some wires and stuff. And so it yeah, so that's where that came from. Yeah,
oh
blood and teeth.
God, and that's teeth amazing.
So,
oh wow.
Yeah, so this is a gift from my wife. Lydia's great because she loves to give presents and she's very bad at keeping surprises. So she'll go, I got you something. You know, even like a week before Valentine's Day, I got you something. Oh, that's really sweet. Do you want me to tell you what it is? No, because it's not Valentine's Day. Why can't, don't you want to? Yeah, no, I want to wait.
Right, right,
and
right,
so,
right. It might be surprised.
You know.
Oh
so
my
that's
God,
that.
That's great. What are you doing for Valentine's Day?
We are not, we're not going out anywhere. Like we love staying home and we've had a very busy.
But sees candies insists.
Very.
And Nordstrom insists.
We've had a very busy social couple weeks, but we also, she made an interesting point last night. She's like, you know, we always make a point to have date nights every week and go out.
Oh, that's
so she's
great.
So she's like, so she goes, if it's okay with you, can we just stay in because everything's going to be super crowded for all the people who don't take the time to have date nights every week. And then they just like throw all their chips on Valentine's Day. And I go, y'all do whatever you want. That sounds great. You're not going to – I'm not – You don't have to force me to stay at home. Like, that's fucking great.
So we're just going to
stay in and probably watch. We started watching Lock and Key, which is a Netflix series by Joe Hill that's based on a comic book that I loved. And so we'll probably just keep watching that.
Oh, that's awesome.
What are you going to do?
Oh, I'm taking my boys to Volta.
Oh, nice.
To the Cirque du Soleil thing.
Nice.
Free tickets. Ooh!
Nice.
I'm excited. Yes.
Yeah. What's the theme of this one?
I don't know. I think the theme is
it electric? Volta sounds electric.
What is it?
Bikes.
Oh, bikes? Oh, my kid is going to go crazy.
I hope it's like BMX bikes, like in the 80s when the... when people would do...
Maybe I'm wrong. Shit.
Is it BMX bikes or is it like hipster penny farthing bikes? Doing stuff on like the big front wheel with the tiny back wheel?
It's
like
it's normal stuff, but I keep seeing the ads.
Yeah,
so they're BMX bikes.
Oh, wow. BMX bikes.
Yeah. Oh, shit, there really is.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, ramps and flips and jumps.
My kid is going to freak out. Anyway, so that's what we're doing tonight.
That sounds really nice.
It's a lot of work. it's going to be at the Dodger Stadium, the parking, everything is going to be a big pain in the ass, getting the stroller, all that shit. But I'm willing to do it.
Thank you so much. This was
so
much
fun. This was a blast.
The end.
ID 10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.